This is the EWN Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to Idea Success with Sylvia, the place you need to be for the next hour for information and inspiration to turn your dreams into dollars, your concepts into cash, and your ideas into income and impact.
And good day, everybody. And depending on when you're listening to the show, Happy New Year. It is now a new year. And I am looking forward to new discoveries and new ideas and new information, as I hope you are. If you want to get your ideas or you want to help others get theirs into action, you are in the right place for the next 60 minutes. If you need to get out of your head and get things done, then stay tuned for the next hour. I'm Sylvia Henderson, the maven of implementation, and I'm honored that you've chosen to spend your most valuable resource in your life, your time, with me today. This show is about ideas. Getting, clarifying, implementing, and supporting ideas. I interview people who've put ideas into action, realized their dreams, achieved their goals, and followed through with their intentions to bring you best practices that you can use right away to actively create your own success. And I interview experts in a wide range of fields who are resources for you to call on to make an income and an impact with your ideas. And that is who I have today. Actually, he fulfills both categories. He's had ideas he's put into action, and he's an expert who can help you get your ideas, figure out how to make them profitable, and actually make a create purpose in the world through profit. Now that I've gotten all tongue-tied on that, my guest is Shell Horowitz. Shell, welcome.
Thanks, Sylvia. Good to be here with you.
Yes, you're probably my longest link to one organization that we both participated in a couple of years ago. So I'm thrilled to continue to have the connection.
Yeah, as I recall, we met in the car going from the airport to the conference and got a good half an hour's head start on everybody else getting acquainted.
Yes, we did. So that's cool. So we're talking about today changing the world through the power of profit. And in case people aren't looking at the description and just listening, the description of the program is businesses, small and large, can change the world with an idea. With profit motives as powerful tools for turning hunger and poverty into sufficiency, war into peace, and catastrophic climate change into planetary balance. Learn how with Shell Horowitz, author, speaker, and green business profitability expert. So with that title, question I love to ask all my guests is, so how in the world did you get to be and what is a green business profitability expert?
Well, excuse me. It's kind of a long journey. It really started when I was about 12, and the first Earth Day happened in 1970. And
I remember that.
It got me started thinking about the environment and about my role in it, and that really began the first steps of a journey. A few interesting things happened when I was 12 that really kind of shook up my worldview and got me moving. That was one of them. Another was experiencing firsthand discrimination when a certain movie theater sold me an adult ticket, made me sit in the children's section, and I got really pissy about that, and began what is now a 46-year boycott of that movie theater. Never been back. And then the third thing that happened was going to my first peace rally and finding out that the Vietnam War was actually not a declared war. It didn't follow the system of checks and balances. So all those three things happened kind of at once and shook up my worldview, which had been pretty complacent, and began the journey through eventually, because my training is in journalism and a lot of the community groups I was involved with doing environmental work or social justice work found that I was a good person to do their media relations because I knew how reporters thought. So that opened up a whole career in marketing. And for many, many years now, I have been doing marketing for small businesses, for nonprofits, for authors and publishers, and for others who need to get the word out. And then through that, I began to really focus after we had a wonderful, amazing campaign here in the Pioneer Valley of Massachusetts, where I live, actually right outside my back door. There's a mountain called Mount Holyoke, and right next to it is the Mount Holyoke Range. And one day I was reading my local paper in November of 1999, and there was a big front page story about this developer that was going to put 40 McMansions on that Mount Holyoke Range 2 miles from my house. And I thought, well, that's pretty stupid. And then I read further into the article, and all of these people who should have known better were saying things like, oh, this is terrible, but there's nothing we can do. Well, that's when I got mad enough to prove them wrong. When these people who were involved in various environmental efforts said there's nothing we can do, that was the red flag in front of the ball. So, having been moved from annoyance to action by people telling me I couldn't, my wife and I organized a movement called Save the Mountain. And we thought that we would have 20 people come to the first meeting, and we'd get maybe 5 getting involved, and we would make the developer's life difficult enough that eventually after about 5 years he would go away. Well, my phone started ringing off the hook. We had 70 people show up for the first meeting. We had another 30 call and say, I can't make it that night. Please, please keep me informed. We had, when the dust settled at the end of that meeting, and let me tell you, I don't live in a McMansion, so we had people jammed into my dining room. We had 2 kitchen tables that we had to stack to make more room. We had people sitting on the wood stove, which was not on. We had people sitting on the bay window. we used every square inch we had. Going to the bathroom involved picking your way very carefully without stepping on anybody. And out of that, there was about an active core of about 35 people that really got involved, and we started attacking this thing on a whole lot of different fronts. And as I said, I thought when we started it would take us 5 years. It only took 13 months, just over a year, before 85 of the 105 acres were preserved forever as state park property adjacent to the park that was already there. Most of the remainder was actually underwater and not buildable, and we did allow them to build 2 houses at the bottom. So near total victory in just over a year. And that got me thinking, here I'd been doing marketing all these years. Well, gee, maybe I could do that marketing for green companies. I could really look at how to help people get the word out about their green products and services and do the work that I'm really skilled at for companies that are making the world better. And during that period, I published my 8th book, Guerrilla Marketing Goes Green, which is part of the Guerrilla Marketing series, and was actually an expanded and updated version of a book I had self-published some years earlier. And then from there, really, just in the last year, I started thinking much, much bigger. I started thinking about how to take this good energy and these good skills and really leave a legacy that would make a difference in the world. Could we use the business community to achieve peace, to end hunger, to solve the climate problem? And what I thought was that guilt is not really that effective a motivator, and that much of the work on these issues has been around guilt. So rather than trying to guilt people into solving poverty and war and hunger and climate change, why not look at the profit motive? So that really changes how you focus on things. And there are, fortunately, hundreds, probably thousands, examples of great companies out there doing great things using the profit motive to achieve this kind of social change. So at age 57 last year, or when I really started getting involved with this, I had kind of thought that I would need to write like 3 more books to build an audience for this concept. And then I was working with a business coach who enabled me to see that I didn't have to wait. I could just start doing this now. So here, I've just turned 58 now. It's a new year, 2015, and I am all fired up and ready to see if I can make a living telling people how to save the world and make a profit.
So you'll be doing sort of what you're going to have other people do, change the world by making, with a profit motive.
Mm-hmm.
In a way.
So now the question is, are there people out there who will hire me to speak and consult and write on this? And I think the answer will be yes.
So you, a couple of things you just said that strike me, and for listeners, I want my listeners to know that I don't have preconceived or pre-developed questions. So the conversations that we have, I sit here writing notes when my guests say things, and my responses are right here on the spot. Conversational responses. So this is what struck me.
Yep. And similarly, I don't have responses to the questions. I don't know what you're going to ask. So this is unscripted. And if I stumble over my words as I did in the middle of that long explanation, you'll have to forgive me.
Oh, goodness. Yes. So, okay, one of the things that struck me that you just said is that you boycotted a business that didn't act right to you, or, it wasn't right for you or treated you wrongly. And I love that because I get so annoyed at times. I get so annoyed with people who basically don't put their money where their mouth is, and that is both withholding their money as well as, investing their money where their mouth is. There's a retailer, we'll just say the number one retailer in the world, so they say, and it begins with a W, that I've been boycotting probably for the last 20 years. And every time somebody says, oh, well, just go there for pricing, I say, I don't shop there. And I get these amazed looks every time I say that from people like, oh, what? So you're making so much money you can't shop there? And I'm like, no, I totally disagree with their politics. I totally disagree with how they treat their employees, and so I'm not going in there. And so I love that you you boycotted and stuck with it, because
on two things there. One is that I happen to not shop at that same company. I decided a long time ago that their policies around labor, their policies around store siting, their policies around a whole lot of other stuff was not compatible with my values, and I think I will be forgiven that my one and only purchase ever at that particular chain was in Cheyenne, Wyoming, when we were heading into the desert and I could not find any other place to buy bottled water, and I bought 2 gallons of water there. Other than that, I have never, ever purchased anything there. But I have to say, they have horrible policies on labor. They have horrible policies on store siting. They put their suppliers through the ringer on the squeezing out of every last cent that they can. I don't shop there for those reasons. But they have been, believe it or not, a real leader in the environment, and I cite them in my talks as an example of a company that is succeeding in the green world not out of any larger social consciousness, but out of pure dollars and cents. If Walmart is doing something, they're not a tree-hugging company. They're doing it because it's profitable. And they have single-handedly doubled the market for organic foods, for example, selling to people who have probably never been in a Whole Foods in their lives. And I respect that. I'm glad they're out there doing it. I still won't shop there. But I'm very glad that they're opening up this, white bread, middle America, lower income strata to eating better. And I'm hoping that maybe some of those people will eventually figure out that there are better ways to eat better than shopping there. But I'll give them props for that. I'll give them props for what they did to lower their own energy footprint and to really be about a greener way of building a store. Again, they're doing it for their own reasons. They're doing it to make fistfuls of money and to save fistfuls of money. But that's okay.
Right.
They will have more influence because of what they can do with their suppliers than I will ever have.
Right. So how does that work then? I mean, this is getting into now. How does it work to want to do something that changes the world? And I'll say that whether it's big, noble, change the world, or whether it's just changing your community, if you're a small business, how does that work?
And maybe those are the same thing.
Yeah. Because, I think we equate green with, oh, that's expensive. That's that cost a lot to do, that cost a lot to implement the green solution. And so, you know, and there's no profit in that. So talk about that, and it's probably the bulk
of
your...
Yeah, that's exactly why I like to cite Walmart, because Walmart proves that to be wrong. Walmart is not doing it to make the world better. Walmart is doing it to make money. And they've made quite a bit of money and saved quite a bit of money. And just as an example, okay, I think it was 2007, my laser printer was wearing out and I needed a new one. And I looked around and finally found one that I had not been able to find before affordably, a two-sided printer. Well, boom, I am saving 40% of my paper costs, and it didn't cost me any more. That printer was $250. There were no printers in its quality class any cheaper than that at that time. So by going to the two-sided printing, and because I'm using recycled paper, which is $40 or $50 a case versus the $20 cheap stuff you can buy from virgin paper.
Right.
Those were dollars that paid right back the purchase of the printer in a very short time. That printer had paid for itself and has gone on to pay for itself probably several more times. Interestingly enough, the other thing I did is I realized that if I bumped up the screen font, as my eyes are no longer as comfortable with tiny print on a computer screen as they used to be, I have to print less. I used to print stuff that was like 5 pages or longer. Now I'll read 20 pages on the screen. So between those two things, my paper bill plummeted. So that's one easy thing. A lot of this is about saving energy and saving water and saving resources. Think about this, Sylvia. Okay, think about a business owner whose business has high ceilings. Maybe it's a sports arena. Maybe it's a warehouse. Anyway, whatever it is, you can't reach the light bulb from the ground. Okay?
Right.
Now, LED light bulbs cost more up front, cost roughly 10 times as much as an incandescent bulb. But they not only use like 1/15th of the energy of an incandescent bulb, and don't quote me on that statistic, but I know it's better than 1 in 10. It's a significant savings. You could run an LED light all day and all night and use only as much electricity as you would do in maybe an hour with an incandescent bulb. But the real savings is you've got the guy on the cherry picker who's got to go out there and change the light bulbs, and it's got to cost, by the time you count the labor, by the time you count your amortization of the equipment, the fuel, it's probably costing you $50 to put in that $10 light bulb. So if you only have to do that every 13 to 15 years versus once a year, I actually did some math on this in one of my columns, and it came out with if you had 50 of these light bulbs that you were changing or not changing for this long period of time, you would save like $4 million over the life of the bulb.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So you have to think holistically. You have to look at all the life cycle costs, which is something we have not been trained to do in this economy. Therefore, you see people claiming, for example, that nuclear power is a good thing for the environment because of the lower carbon footprint. And they discount all of the holistic factors, such as the uranium has to be mined, it has to be milled, it has to be processed, it has to be transported. All of these things have a carbon cost, plus the actual running it through the reactor has some carbon cost. And then you've got to deal with the waste afterwards, which is something we don't actually know how to do. We have no idea how we're going to keep this waste isolated from the environment for the next, and I kid you not, 250,000 years until it is safe. You know, think about that. We have, what's the oldest stuff we have? It's like 30,000-year-old arrowheads. And here we're talking about isolating something from the environment for 250,000 years. People will probably not even be able to read instructions in English down that road. So, and then the other piece, of course, is when there is a nuclear accident. And notice I didn't say if, but I said when. We have had over 100 major nuclear accidents that most people have not heard about. The environmental consequences are utterly catastrophic to the point that there are large sections of Ukraine that are still uninhabitable 25 years after Chernobyl. So don't let anybody try to tell you that nuclear power is a green alternative. And don't try to let anybody tell you that you can look at these things in isolation and not systemically.
Well, and you look at Japan, another example of nuclear power gone amok.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, Japan is doing fairly well, having shut down its very large number of reactors after Fukushima. They're doing fine. They don't seem to be having power shortages.
So as you're talking, I'm thinking, okay, so for some listeners, they're like, okay, tell me more. For others, they're like, okay, I'm just me. And your story earlier about your change with Save the Mountain was like perfect for the listener who's saying, I'm just me. How in the world can I take an idea and make a change, as one person? And you kind of answered that with that story. I don't know if you have more to say about that.
Oh, yeah, I do. It's all of us have that conversation. Gandhi had to have that conversation with himself. How can I do it if I'm just me? Lech Walesa, who was, for goodness sake, a steel worker, a shipyard, became the president of Poland. Nelson Mandela, from serving a life sentence in prison, it's just me, and somehow it's just me got out of prison, became the president of South Africa, and led that country to democracy without revenge. That is one of the most remarkable achievements of, I think, human history. When I look at the peacemaking component of what business can do, I think about Mandela. I think about him going out to the nearly all white and very conservative rugby fans. If you've seen the movie Invictus, it's all about this. To enlist them as agents of change in the new South Africa. This is really a remarkable thing. These are individuals. Individuals, though, here's the secret. Individuals get more accomplished when they join with other individuals. I did not stop that housing project on that mountain all by myself. We had literally thousands of people involved, at least on the level of signing a petition, putting up a lawn sign, writing a letter to the editor. Thousands of people. There's only about 150,000 people in my county, so people noticed. You talk also, when we were talking about the company out of Bentonville there, you talked about both investing and disinvesting. You can invest money, you can also invest time, you can invest energy, you can invest thinking in the companies you want to support. Around here, there's a huge buy local movement that has changed the way people shop for food. There are now, I think, 39 farmers markets in my county. There used to be two. And the farmers are selling direct to consumer, and they're selling high quality produce. I mean, here it is January in New England. It's not a time you're going to see a lot of fresh veggies in the supermarket from local sources. But at these farmers markets, those farmers who've invested in greenhouses are still producing greens, and they're getting people like me to pay $7 for a half a pound of spinach because it's so much better than what you can get in the supermarket. But the other thing is, during the summer, we're members of CSA Farm, and for really pennies a week, we're getting fresh vegetables from usually late May or early June all the way through October. Every week we go and get our vegetables, and it's just for a couple $100 a year. Amazing. Plus we have our own garden. But the point I was making with this is that there was organizing around changing the viewpoint of how we eat, and it worked. These people who had been isolated from each other, when they lent their voices collectively, all of a sudden they had power and they had influence and they had the ability to change the way people shop.
Or build or whatever. So I think that's a huge lesson for anybody who's in a community, which most of us are, especially suburbanites, what we can do instead of hole up in our houses and go from car to garage to living room and not get involved.
Yeah, and there are a lot of things that are so easy, Sylvia, just minor little lifestyle changes you can make. Like if you're going just a couple miles, go by bike. Not when it's ice on the roads, obviously, or horrible weather. But a lot of your errands, if you do them by bike, first of all, you'll get a nice workout. And second, your carbon footprint approaches zero for that trip. And third, it's fun and you see more interesting things. You notice things around you. Or eat less meat. That's one of the best, easiest ways to go green that there are. I've been a vegetarian all the way back to when I was 16. And the way that beef in particular is raised in this country, but meat in general, is very resource intensive, is not kind to the animals for the most part, and does not particularly provide a healthy product. So if you just start, like, let's say, two meals a week that you're not going to eat meat at those two meals, that's a start. And that's a little thing you can do that's not going to be any trouble at all. I found that when I became a vegetarian, the whole world of wondrous foods that I'd never been exposed to opened up to me, and it was really very good for my gourmet palate to become a vegetarian.
Wow.
But I'm not saying everybody should be a vegetarian, but certainly everybody could cut back a little bit on the amount of meat. And for every pound of meat that you consume, you've taken 7 pounds of grain off the market that was used to produce it. So by eating the grain directly or the vegetables directly, you're eating better on the food chain and you're opening up those resources to feed other hungry people.
So I'm going to have to take about a 2-minute break. When we come back, I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate and ask you, this will get you ready for the response, and ask you how I have, if I'm a business owner, and I have the idea that I want to be more green, to be greener, to make more of an impact on the world by making less of an impact on the world. How do I, that obviously sounds like, number one, a way to differentiate myself from tons of other similar businesses, but also the other question, part of my question is going to be, what's my message? What's my messaging, since you're marketing, so that people don't roll their eyes and say, oh, my God, he or she is a tree hugger. And, you know, like I said, I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit by using that term. So think about that, and I will be right back.
Okay.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is, you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who've been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called accelerated networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. And once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
How many times have you had an idea, yet you let so many thoughts fill your head that you're stuck in inaction and don't handle any of them? How quickly do you jump from idea to idea without focusing on any one for very long? You've got to change that pattern if you hope to get things done and turn your ideas to reality. Let Sylvia Henderson and the IdeaSuccessNetwork.com give you tools, resources, and strategies that turn your dreams into dollars, your concepts into cash, and your ideas into income. If you want to get profitable and fulfill your purpose by getting your ideas in action, go to IdeaSuccessNetwork.com and enter your name and email address for your Idea Success Note. Sylvia's bi-monthly tips and practices for getting out of your head and into action. You owe it to yourself to do it today, right now, before another idea fills your head to overflowing.
And we're back. I'm Sylvia Henderson, your host, and I am talking with Shel Horowitz. And by the way, before we move on to answering the questions, since we're in the middle of station breaks, let folks know how they can learn more about the things you're talking about, what you've got that they can get a hold of, that kind of thing, in your book. So give yourself a little bit of an advertisement here before we move on, Shel.
Sure, Sylvia. My main website is greenandprofitable.com, and I'm going to actually give people a gift here. If you're listening to Sylvia's show, you can get a free copy of my ebook, Painless Green, which has 111 tips for saving energy and water. Probably about 90 of them cost nothing or next to nothing. And then there's a few that are more expensive and for those more committed. To get that, you'll visit painlessgreenbook.com/earthday, and it'll ask you for a code, and just put in Sylvia. So painlessgreenbook.com/earthday, you'll get 111 great green tips of which you can implement the vast majority spending nothing or spending a dollar or two to save energy and water. And then the main site is greenandprofitableand.com. And the other thing I should mention is that I'm on Twitter with my name, SHELHOROWIT, as in Tom, Z as in Zebra. The most recent full-length book is Guerrilla Marketing Goes Green. It was part of the Guerrilla Marketing series of some 60-odd books that really revolutionized marketing. And there is a link on the Green and Profitable website to that. You can also get it from your favorite retailer, and particularly nice if you get it from your local independent bookseller. And, we walk the talk here. Or you can get it directly from me, and then you can get it autographed. And there's a nice bonus package no matter where you get it from. If you follow the link over to the book's own website, you can read about that. So the question was how to not be pigeonholed as a tree hugger while doing the right thing. Well, first of all, when I do my Making Green Sexy talks, I talk about three different kinds of audiences for green products and services. You have the deep greens. Those are the people that live and breathe this stuff, people like me. You have the lazy greens, people who will do the right thing if it's directly in front of them and equally convenient. So, for example, my mother-in-law told me when she found out that I was going to tour the Markel toilet paper factory, which has been making recycled toilet paper since, get this, 1950? I arranged to see it, and I was staying at her house because she's in New York City, not too far from their plant in New Jersey. And she says to me in her Queens accent, "I always buy Markel because it's recycled." Well, she is a lazy green. She always buys Markel because it's not only recycled, but it's right next to the Scott and the other brands and the supermarket that she's already in. So, she would not be going across town to get recycled toilet paper from some other place. But since it's there, she'll buy it. And then you've got the Hummer driving to the convenience store quarter mile away, 50-inch flat-screen TVs going in every room, non-green. Why would a non-green buy a green product? Well, if you can show them that it's better, cheaper, more durable, feels nicer, you go for the product advantages, and then you can maybe educate them a little because you can show them that the reason your product has these advantages is actually because the green thinking that went into it. So you can start to push these people a little bit from the non-green or even hostile category into the lazy green category. So the way you market, obviously, is just as you would never, ever want to run the same advertisement in, say, the National Enquirer and the New Yorker, is you design marketing for those three particular audiences that are different from each other. So this is something I help my clients do. I think I'm really good at it, actually, is finding the right message points for the particular audience, and it's going to be different. It's even going to be different within those sectors. For example, the way you would market to somebody who is buying organic food products for health reasons is going to be different from the way you market organic food products for people who are buying them for reasons having to do with chemical contamination of their local environment. And those, in turn, are different from the buyer who is looking really holistically at the whole world and at planetary systems. So the more of this segmenting you do, the sharper your marketing is, and the more people are going to flock to you.
That's like basic marketing.
Yeah, but it's something, it's so funny, you don't see this. In the green world, you see most companies who are green will do one of either two things. Either they'll just not even mention it. Like, if you're in a carpet shop, you will generally not see a lot about the sustainability initiatives that Interface Floor has done. Remarkable stuff. If you're in the green world, you'll hear about it. But not in the stores that are selling their products and their competitors. They're losing that competitive differentiation, I think, that they could have.
But I would think
a lot of companies in the green world who are only marketing to the deep greens, and they forget that there's these other two portions of the market that are actually pretty substantial that they could be marketing to. And a lot of their marketing is based on the guilt factor, and I don't think guilt is an effective marketing tool. I think self-interest works much better, which is why I've chosen to show business the self-interest in solving these big problems of hunger, poverty, war, climate change, rather than trying to guilt them into doing it.
Mm. And I would think the middle market that you mentioned is more of a potential even than the deep green in terms of marketing, because at least, and I'll say we, because I'm there, we at least are willing to listen, whereas the Hummer driving folks are sort of, Laura comment about, I drive a Hummer, but I care, you know, but oh well, it's my show, I can say what I want. Whereas,
yeah,
I think the middle market is
the biggest potential for growth, and that just as we can push people from the hostile to the non-green to the lazy green, we can also push lazy greens into being deeper green, and we all have to start somewhere. I was a lazy green at one point, and then I joined my first food co-op, not because I had any commitment to food co-ops, but because it was a way of saving money on food, and that was 1975. Over time, I became educated about these things. But, you start with where people are, and you try to move them a little incremental push, but not so much that they're scared or freaked out, but enough so that they start to turn some wheels in their brains and start to think differently and do differently. I mean, who would have thought, even 10, 15 years ago, who would have thought that environmental consciousness would have become mainstream? I like to think that I had at least a little to do with that. I think Al Gore had more to do with it. because people have been working on this stuff behind the scenes for 50, 60 years, we're starting to reach that 100th monkey tipping point. We're starting to reach the point where people understand that what we've been doing isn't going to work and that there are other ways of doing that are better and cheaper and more effective and more profitable and will help us pass this planet down to our children and grandchildren.
The messaging also strikes me as important, too, because I wrote a little question here. Why does recycled paper, you talked about toilet paper. I said, yeah, by the way, why does recycled paper cost more? So I'm thinking, okay, if I'm trying to sell, based on my doing the right thing, if I'm trying to sell or make a profit, based on my doing the right thing, but yet doing that, I'm charging you more than, you know, the lesser, the cheaper product, I would think my messaging has got to explain, you know, why that is. I watch Shark Tank. That's one of my guilty pleasures is I watch Shark Tank. And they always talk about
if you have a company like Seventh Generation that has made recycled toilet paper for a long time, and they, their marketing is all about that. It's all aimed at the deep green and at convincing people that they should part with considerably more money for the roll of toilet paper than they would elsewhere. Then you've got Markel. Markel markets to the mainstream, to that lazy green. Markel is a price leader. Not only do they not charge more for the recycled toilet paper, but usually they come in a little cheaper than some of the other brands. So that becomes a marketing advantage for them. If you can have the recycled, high-quality product, Trader Joe is another one. They've got a 100% recycled toilet paper line. And, you know, again, it's a price-competitive product. So they're able to reach people who are buying on price. And then, of course, as you start to do that more, you get economies of scale, and the cost of producing it goes down. You see this with solar. Solar has gotten so much cheaper now than it was 10 years ago, and amazingly cheaper than it was 30 years ago, and more efficient. And you're going to see more and more of this. And you're going to see people combining technologies in very innovative ways. So here's one of my favorite examples, looking at the power of a product to change lives. There's a company called D-Light, and they make solar-powered LED lanterns. And you're thinking, big deal. So they make solar-powered LED lanterns. So what? Well, they are selling them at a profit, mind you, all over Africa and Asia to people who have had kerosene lanterns in the past. Let me tell you about kerosene lanterns. First of all, if you're making, let's just say, $60 a month, you don't really want to be spending $10 a month every month to buy kerosene. Second, the things are putting out toxic fumes. Third, huge fire hazard. The number of kerosene fire-related injuries and deaths is scandalous. So D-Lite comes in, and they're replacing a toxic, poor-quality light, flammable, all these environmental problems, all these health issues go out the door, and for the price of a month or two supply of kerosene, you can buy an LED lamp that you can charge with the sun and you can use for years, and it gives you a better quality light. What happens when you have a better quality of light in some hut, in some village, in some developing country somewhere? Well, the kids can do their homework, get better grades in school, and maybe get into some of those higher paid, higher status professions. The parents can come home from the fields and start some little cottage industry, assembling some little craft item, let's say. And boom, this $20 lamp is a ladder out of poverty, as well as a very healthy profit generator for the company. This is the sort of thing I'm talking about.
Wow. I'm thinking of how much resource we have here that needs to be developed, let alone somewhere else here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Let alone somewhere else in the pockets of poverty. We are.
Yeah.
We have about 15, 16 minutes left. What have I not asked you about that you really want to get a message out about?
You haven't asked me about the power of negawatts and negabarrels, conservation.
Whoa.
Real conservation.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a phrase coined by Amory Lovins, who is, I think, one of the most visionary people on the planet. I discovered him sometime around 1978 or 80, and I was amazed, and I'm still amazed by him. Amory was one of the consultants that the Empire State Building brought in, for example, when they decided to do what's called the deep green retrofit. They remachined all the windows. They put in very sophisticated heating and cooling controls. They did all the stuff. It was not pocket change. It cost them $13 million to do this project. But every year, they are saving $4.4 million on their energy bills. $4.4 million a year out of $13 million total investment, that, my friend, works out to a 33% ROI.
Wow.
Now, I don't know about you, but my bank book sure isn't showing 33%.
Really?
This is the best investment you can make. It pays back faster. You have to do it right. You know, there are plenty of ways to fritter money away on green energy projects. But if you think systemically, and if you look at the whole picture, and you look at where can we really make savings without increasing costs, you get numbers like that.
Huh.
This is why the UK and Denmark and Germany are able to do just fine, thank you, on lifestyle quality using about half as much energy per capita as we do. And I will point out that those are in the cold belt. They are heating their houses in the winter. So we can do this. We should be able to easily cut our energy use in the United States by 50% within just a few years if we were really serious about it, and then another 50% beyond that in, let's say, 10 or 15 more years with some more effort without sacrificing quality of life.
And that sounds like one person at a time, one family at a time.
Well, to get those sorts of drops, you're going to have to do more than one family at a time. But I just was reading the other day about a town in Sweden that has slashed, already the UK is using, sorry, the EU is using half as much, generating half as much carbon and waste as the US. But this town in Sweden is now generating one third as much as the typical EU community average. So there's potential for really vast, vast change with the resources we have.
So a lot of, a few of the examples have been sort of something existed and a company looked at how to do it better or how to retrofit or how to change.
Mm-hmm.
Say I have an idea, whether it's me individually or whether it's my company, and I want to build in from scratch this world-changing, this society-changing effect while making a profit, what are some of the questions I need to ask myself? What are some of the steps I need to take sort of from the beginning in order to achieve?
Well, first you have to accept the possibility of possibility. There is a wonderful, wonderful quote by Muhammad Ali that talks about how impossible is a word thrown around by small-minded men who can't see the potential for change, and that impossible is not the truth but a dare. I'm paraphrasing here, but I love that. If you can imagine something possible, all of a sudden it's much more likely to be possible. So that's the first step. Then the second is to figure out your goal and then re-engineer working backwards from the goal to how do you get there. So D-Lite came in looking for a poverty project, and they working backwards, realizing that replacing kerosene lanterns with these solar LED lanterns could accomplish that. They definitely had a social agenda, but they set it up in a way that they were also making good profits. So these are two of the key things that you have to do, is not accept the limitations, number one, and number two, figure out how the goal can be reached, what steps you need to take to get there. And this is something I can work with people on also. And there's just so much out there. There's so many good ideas. The field of energy, the field of food, the looking at biomimicry, how to recreate in nature the processes that are working so well, how do we recreate them in the human environment? For example, can we design something as incredibly strong and powerful and lightweight as spider silk and use that as a structural material? And Buckminster Fuller was really good at this sort of thing. So he came up with things like the geodesic dome, a whole different way to build a building. He, by the way, was very much an advocate of solar power and other green technologies, and I'm not at all surprised. He would love to see the evolution that's taking place on these issues. You can look at, you know, I did a speech at the Sustainable Foods Summit a few years ago, and it was an 8-minute keynote on the history and future of sustainable food. And I looked at how the Green Revolution came in and made all of a sudden the quantities of food growing were much, much larger, and therefore we could feed a much larger population, but the quality of food was sacrificed. And then before that, there were the organic, most of history farming has been organic. And, you know, but they weren't generating enough. But now with 60 or 70 years of experience with the Green Revolution and a much better knowledge of organic farming technologies and methods, we are creating systems that are as productive as the Green Revolution stuff and as high quality as the original kinds of food systems we had before all these chemicals came in. So we're finding that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Mm. And you can look at sector after sector with this. Some of the technologies for wind power, for example, you know, you think of wind power, you think of these 300-foot-tall monstrous things with the blades that are like as big as my house. But I know a guy here in Massachusetts who's doing little vertical access, small-scale wind. They look like an oil drum that's been cut in the shape of a flower. And they, instead of being on a horizontal axis, they're vertical axis. So the petals of the flower, so to speak, become the turbine, and they spin around in a circle parallel to the ground, on a pole that is going from the ground up to the top of the pole.
Right.
So this is a way of making wind accessible in places where those big turbines are not practical. And it's a way of doing so without the bird kill issues and without the noise problems and without the servicing issues. And often when you look at how these systems can be decentralized, the answers just pop out. I am not an inventor, okay? I'm not a technology guy. But I am gifted with the ability to see the potential for these. and to show people how they can reach their markets with these, and to be an ambassador for them, and to say, this is the world of possible. This is the world of now. These are things that we can do right now. We do not have to accept the ridiculous idea that we need to keep gouging fossil fuels out of the earth and killing our lungs with what we burn to make power. There are so many better ways to do it. And again, every single thing you look at in society, there are these potentials for great transformative changes that make the world better, that make ourselves better.
So what do we look for when we're looking at businesses what do we look for in order to determine whether a business is genuine with their efforts and with their results, or whether they're just, you know, using the phrases of the day? It's kind of like looking for foods that are good for your diet. There are some that claim, oh, low fat, oh, a lot less salt, and you're thinking less than what?
Yeah, exactly. What you're talking about is what's commonly called greenwashing. And greenwashing is something I do not support. Painting a green brush over something that's really quite brown is not ultimately a good idea, and it will come back to bite you for those who are trying it. So the wonderful thing is, Sylvia, we have the internet, we have social media. It's much harder to pull something over on people than it used to be. So you do a little research. Just as if you're giving money to charity, you probably go to Charity Navigator and see how much of that money actually goes to programs. Similarly, every company pretty much out there now produces a sustainability report on their green practices. And you look and you can see, and you look for, are they talking about the whole life cycle? Are they talking about all the components? Or are they, like nuclear power, trying to put a green face on something that is inherently extremely ungreen? Are they using words that have a legal definition, like organic? Or are they using words that have no definition, like natural? You can call anything you want natural. Nobody can come after for it. Whereas if you say something is certified organic, there is a standard that it had to meet. And incidentally, that standard includes no GMOs. So if people are concerned about GMO, the very best thing you can do is to eat organic, because then you know you're not getting GMOs as well as other harmful chemicals. All of this stuff, it's a web. It's all connected. And it may feel a little overwhelming, but the nice thing is you can break it down piece by piece, and it's actually not overwhelming.
That's why I wanted the conversation with you today, because you make it more real than the stuff I read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a gift I have, is that I am able to do that. I'm able to show people that it's not about sitting in the dark huddling under a series of blankets. It's about living a deeply meaningful, highly positive, happy life while making the world better. And while making lifestyle choices and purchasing choices and investment choices and business startup choices that push us toward that better world.
And I seldom ask this question because I don't get political with my show, but I do live here in what I think is an absolutely marvelous city, Washington, D.C. However, people from all over the USA send human beings to reside in the yellow building, in the white buildings in the middle of the town. So what messages should we be giving? What messages should we be giving those folks that come here every 4 years and do the things they do and don't do the things that they don't do in order to promote, you know, a sustainable world?
Well, they need to be held accountable, and the way they are held accountable is when they hear from their constituents. I think regardless of whether you agree or disagree with Obama's politics, he ran an amazing campaign in 2008 based on motivating people through social media, among other things. And then once he got into office, he kind of forgot that he had that power, and he did not have those people organized to put pressure on the senators and congressmen that needed to be convinced that there was enough public backing for these things, so they all withered and died on the vine. Mm-hmm. I think if he had been as skilled in managing social media and citizen involvement post-inauguration, we might have had a very different outcome, and the people coming in this week to take their seats might be somewhat differently composed. But I do want to make sure, Sylvia, also, that I let your listeners know that I will be happy to provide anybody who qualifies with a 15-minute telephone consult on how they can go deeper with sustainability in their own business, or with what I prefer to think of as thrivability, going beyond sustainability, and what
right.
opportunities there might be in the companies that you're running or thinking of running to really move this wider agenda of ending poverty, ending hunger, ending war, and resolving catastrophic climate change. So if anybody who, you know, can fairly easily demonstrate to me that they're serious about doing this work, I will give you 15 minutes on the phone. Send me an email, shel at greenandprofitable.com, and we'll get that process started. I'll send you a very short list of questions to answer, and then most people will get a yes, let's schedule something. So that's a benefit
Great.
That people get because they happen to listen to us today.
Great. And the last
Plus,
couple of
course,
minutes,
the e-book.
Again, yeah, I was going to say, and last couple of minutes, again, how do people reach you otherwise, and your e-book again?
The e-book is called Painless Green, and it's got 111 different ways to use less energy and water. And as I said, the vast majority of those cost nothing to implement or almost nothing to implement. And that you get at painlessgreenbook.com/earthday. And then enter the code Sylvia. And then the book, the full-scale marketing textbook on green marketing is called Guerrilla Marketing Goes Green. You can find that at my Green and Profitable website. There's the $2,000 in bonuses. You'll have to follow the link to read more about that. I can be reached at shel at greenandprofitable.com, Twitter, shelhorowitz, or by phone, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 413-586-2388, 413-586-2388.
Excellent. With 30 seconds or more left, a final tagline, a final ending that people remember your message by?
That we can do this as long as we don't let anybody convince us that we can't. Impossible really is a dare and not a truth.
And you said impossible, and I was doing work with, it wasn't Avon Breast Cancer at that time, it was a different breast cancer event, but they used the word impossible, and they had the I am in a different color than the rest of the word, so that it read, I'm possible. So I thought that
I like
was
that.
Cool. So.
Yeah.
I think they trademarked that. I think they trademarked that, so I can't use it. But
no. But the point is that every one of us can make a difference. I made a difference with Save the Mountain. I'm making a difference in this work I'm doing now. You know, the president of Poland, who was a shipyard worker, the Senegalese president who had been a poet, Mother Teresa, who was just a Catholic nun, who put her foot down and said, I'm going to do something about poverty. These are individuals just like you and me.
And so, just like you and me, Shel, we've had a wonderful conversation. We're coming to the end of the program, and thank you so much for sharing your views and sharing with us real hows for turning our ideas into sustainability and profitability. So thanks for being on the show.
You're welcome. It's nice to be able to go this deep. I don't do that with every interview.
All righty. Well, you take care, and I have an outgoing outro for the show. So talk to you later.
That wraps up another hour of Ideas Success with Sylvia, with information and inspiration to turn your dreams into dollars, your concepts into cash, and your ideas into income and impact. Join me next week, same dot time, same dot channel, same dot number, for another episode of Ideas Success with Sylvia.